Argument is 17-1033, Clausen v. Alon Pharmaceuticals.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Morning.
I'm here again on this case representing Clausen Immunotherapies. The last time we were here, the exact same issue that's presented to the court this time was presented to the court. Whether or not certain post-approval activities are within or outside the scope of the safe harbor. The court on remand asked the district court to look only at post-approval activities, the reanalysis, the identification of inventorship, and the packaging and sale of the kit claims, which are the product by process claims. The CFC specifically said, this is quoting from the earlier decision, Clausen also asserts that certain activities that occurred after the FDA submissions infringed the 472 patent. Those activities are not exempted under the safe harbor. Because the district court did not determine whether those activities constitute infringement or whether they were exempt, we vacate the judgment of non-infringement and remand.
Mr. Zito, could I ask you when the expiration date of this patent is? The date seems to be have been November 99. It was extended by 298 days, but it's subject to a terminal disclaimer. What is the expiration date?
I don't know the exact date, but it expired last summer in 2016.
It expired.
I think in June of 2016. Okay.
What's the date? I'm sorry.
Well, the fact of expiration is basically what I wanted to know.
So at least a year or two ago, yes.
You answered it.
Okay. And these activities occurred in the early 2002-2003 time frame, the analysis activities that we're now still here on. And although the district court said, accordingly, the sole question now before this court is whether Elon's post-submission activities constitute infringement of the 472 patent, or whether they were exempt, the court went back and looked at all those activities in light of the Teltronics case, which is, as the circuit court here said, is not applicable to Clausen's position. Briefly, the Teltronics case said, if you do some activity after submission, you don't unprotect the activity that was accused of infringement that was part of the clinical study. And that's not what's happening here. What's happening here is the activity in the clinical study is not accused of infringement. It's not the activity that would be the infringing activity. And so there's no attempt, as there was in Teltronics, to pull something out of protection based upon dissemination of information.
You don't argue in your brief, as I recall, maybe I'm missing something. We had a case, Momenta 2.
Yes.
Cited in 2015, which I think may bear on your issues here, and you don't discuss it in your brief. You discuss Momenta 1, but not Momenta 2. Do you know the case I'm referring to?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think it helps you?
I don't know, Your Honor. I know the case of Momenta.
I think there may be an argument that it helps you. That's why I didn't see you arguing for it.
Okay. We do cite a number of cases that already help us on page 43 of our brief, which talk about shipments of samples of patented products infringe, making products and shipping them abroad infringes, including the case of Scripps and Clinic and Research Fund versus Genentech from the Northern District of California, 87, which says preparation of an application for a patent is beyond the protection of Section 271E1 and constitutes use of a product serving multiple purposes unrelated to meeting the FDA requirements. I don't think we need the help for momentum too, and that's maybe that's why it's in our brief. Because we're not, again, and what the district court did was instead of looking at post activities, the district court said that.
What are the activities that you claim are infringing that are not covered by the safe harbor and previous decisions?
When we look at claim 131, which is claim 33, 36, and then 131, because 131 relies on, remember there was a substantial reexamination that occurred over a 4.5 year period that narrowed the number of claims down. When we look at that claim, certainly let's, and we'll start backwards, if you will. It's on page 11 and 12 of our brief, the blue brief.
Are you talking about claim 33 of the 472 patent?
I'm talking about claim 131 of the 472 patent.
Which depends on claim 33.
Say again?
Which depends on claim 33.
Depends from claim 36, which depends from claim 33.
Right.
And the reason we go to that claim is that claim 33 and 36 did not survive reexamination, but claim 131 did.
Okay.
Okay. So when we look at that claim, we see that the last element is wherein commercializing further comprises documenting inventorship.
Documenting inventorship? That's an abstract idea.
Well,
why is that contribute to infringement of a claim?
Well, a documenting inventorship is not an abstract idea. It's process of
determining and using an intellectual process and or writing it down. And when you go back to claim 33, analyzing data to identify commercial value?
Correct.
How is that infringing?
Well, and you're getting to the point of the remand, which was what this court asked the district court to do, was potentially consider those questions, potentially consider infringement questions based upon that, potentially consider other validity questions based upon these activities, which had nothing to do with FDA approval. They occurred after it. But unfortunately, none of that analysis is here before the court.
Are there invalidity contentions, whether defenses or counterclaims, in this case, or were there?
There were invalidity contentions and counterclaims, which were parallel to the defendant here filed the reexamination of the original two patents that were in this case. Now we're down to one patent with reduced number of claims because the invalidity contentions.
As to the claims that are right now in front of us,
yes.
Were there invalidity contentions, whether by way of defense or counterclaim, in this case?
Yes, there were.
What's the status of those?
Because they were.
Well, were they dismissed without prejudice to reinstatement?
Essentially, yes, in order to have the first appeal.
Essentially, yes, or actually, yes?
Yeah, well, it gets complicated because of the intervening reexamination.
Our jurisdiction, you know, may actually turn on the answer to this question.
Okay. They were not dismissed. They were dismissed without prejudice to reinstate pending the appeal. So they were not dismissed from the case. They still exist in the case. They're not affected because it was reexamination, not an inter partes review, so they were not mooted by those same issues being brought before the patent office.
Okay.
But again, there's been
a 101 allegation in this case?
Say again?
A 101 allegation in this case.
There's been no briefing or detailed 101 allegations, but it has been raised by defendant where they have said, we believe that even if this comes back from the next appeal, we would raise 101. They said that to the district court in pleading. So it has been raised, but not briefed nor formulated in any manner.
That's one of those contentions that has been dismissed conditionally.
Correct. So it's still in the case. It's not that that's.
So can I ask, I understood at least in my mind, I was dividing your contentions here into two pieces, the method claims and the kit claims. Mm-hmm. The method claims, as I understand it, are about post-October 16th, 2001 reanalysis.
Correct.
Okay. And one ground, alternative ground, right at the end of the district court's opinion for granting summary judgment of non-infringement as to that, was the conclusion that you just didn't have the evidence to show that such reanalysis took place.
Correct.
Is my understanding correct that that piece of the district court's analysis applies only to the method claims and not to the kit claims, the claims that say we claim the sale of a product with a label or a package insert that includes some information? Because those claims, the kit claims, don't depend, or do they depend, on the post-October 16th, 2001 analysis, reanalysis?
The kit claims are dependent upon the method claim, so they are a product-by-process claim. So the defendant would argue that they do depend upon that.
But do they depend on such analysis as took place after October 16th, 2001, or not?
Yes, they would depend, because they depend from the method claim from which the kit claims depend is parallel to claim 33. It's just claim 73 that happens to depend from. Now, the district court found that activity did occur. They didn't find there was no evidence. They found that there was evidence. And what their statement was, the evidence of commercialization is insufficient to overcome Teltronics to bring the... Again, they misapplied. Insufficient to overcome Teltronics to bring it out of the protected harbor. But they agree. They said the reanalysis that was done by Elon. The argument that no reanalysis done is doesn't make any sense, because they filed a submit a group of researchers filed a submission to the FDA. No, that submission didn't file itself at the patent office as a patent application. The patent application is completely rewritten. It addresses prior art, which is an evaluation. One of the steps of evaluation is it has to be a new adverse event. So there's the obviousness and the novelty analysis that was clearly done. And Elon admits in their brief that a pre-filing validity analysis was done. That's part of the analysis that was done. There are different people named as inventors than the people that were researchers. So there was a reanalysis and a reworking of the... And clearly they... Whether it's an intellectual step or not, they clearly did the documenting inventorship, because they named who the inventors were and documented why. So, yes, one of the things that the court said was go back and see if there's evidence of infringement. And the district court said there's evidence of all these steps being done. But then they just simply got it wrong, because they thought, I don't know why, because it's explicit in the court's decision, that they now need to analyze these infringing activities in light of Teltronics and decide whether the post-activities take the FDA clinical activities out of the safe harbor. And that's never been plaintiff's assertion of infringement in this case. It's that if you do these steps, which include documenting inventorship, analyzing, making sure it is patentable, which is the analyzing a new adverse event, looking at potential commercial value, commercializing, all the steps which were unrefutably done, because otherwise there would not have been a patent application, there wouldn't have been a patent prosecution, wouldn't have issued, and as you said, if you sell a product with a label on it, you can't refute that you're not doing the kit claim. And the only way you get to the kit claim with a product with a label on it that's protected by Elon's three patents is by having done the other steps.
We're well into your rebuttal.
So yeah, I
we saved the remainder and listened here at the other side. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Klassen was provided every opportunity on remand to articulate its infringement allegations with more specificity and clarity and to provide evidence supporting those allegations, yet Klassen did neither. For example, the discussion this morning about reanalysis of data, Klassen argued to the district court that there must have been some type of reanalysis of data, but presented no evidence about that issue. And contrary to counsel's representation just now, the district court actually said that, and this is at appendix page 11 of the district court's opinion, that Klassen has produced no evidence of Elan's alleged reanalysis of the data for commercial purposes so as to raise a genuine issue of material fact. Also, Klassen's arguments focus on Elan's patents, Elan's labeling, and Elan's, in the brief, they talk about Elan's business activities.
You're not talking about safe harbor. You're saying no infringement.
Excuse me?
They're just saying there was no infringement, not that there was a safe harbor.
Correct. They're saying you can't look at the safe harbor. Klassen is arguing there was infringement separate and apart from any activity that related to the safe harbor. But they don't identify what that activity is. They present no evidence about that. The only evidence in the record are two deposition transcripts from two employees, and the district court looked at that information and properly noted there's nothing in that transcript that talks about analyzing data at all. It's about attending a conference and also having conversations with Dr. Klassen, but nothing about actually reanalyzing data during the patenting process. And
why does that point, the point you're just making based on that last page or so of the district court's opinion, apply to the kit claims? Is that because of what Mr. Zito said, that even the kit claims depend on the post-October 16th, 2001 reanalysis?
That's our position, Your Honor, that the product by process claim, this is a different type of product by process claim, and it's similar to others in that the process limitations must be taken into account interpreting that claim. But in a conventional product process by claim, if it was like, for example, a method of manufacturing a product, if you manufactured that, use those process steps for manufacturing during your FDA clinical trial, that would be exempt. If you later practice those same method steps to manufacture the product unrelated to the FDA process, that would be infringement. Here, we have claims.
What if you practice the process pre-FDA submission and did it for the purposes of the FDA submission, but then you sold the product after the FDA approval and included the process, namely the information development, in what is, after all, post-approval product.
At that point, you're
post-approval activity.
At that point, you're selling a product together with information, and we argue this is similar to Telectronics. You're disseminating information with this product that was developed during the FDA process, and that cannot constitute infringement. And in fact,
and the specific situation in Telectronics was what?
Where there was dissemination of information to commercial investors and for business purposes.
Was it just the information that was accused of infringement, or was there something like this, which is the sale of a physical thing accompanied by the information?
There were also allegations about business development, commercial-type business.
So, I mean, that's why Telectronics is actually a little bit, maybe even quite importantly, different from this. The fact is, after the FDA approval of the supplemental, the sale of the product is not within the safe harbor, right?
The sale of the physical product is not within the safe harbor.
Right, so they claim the sale of the physical product with certain information.
And the argument is that Klassen's argument is that you've attached to that product this information developed during the FDA process, and that information must be included in the label under FDA rules in order to maintain and continue your approval of that product. So you must include that information when you sell the product to maintain approval of your product. That's a predicate for that. We argue that is even moves it again back into the safe harbor in the sense of that information.
I'm not actually sure what to make of this, but forget about information. The safe harbor is about doing experiments, making stuff, using stuff, maybe even selling stuff, I don't know, in order to develop a product, and you submit it all to all the information to the FDA, and the FDA says, yes, you have something. After that, you then take all of that activity, which you've done for the purpose of getting FDA approval, and now you're allowed to make the product, and you sell the product. No more safe harbor, even though you're using everything you did before. Why in the world should this be any different? Assuming that all of the information, which I think Mr. Zito says is not the case, that all the information that's relevant here is pre-October 16th, 2001. That's the submission date, right?
Right. And I think the difference is, we believe the difference is, unlike most of the situations that have involved this similar scenario, those activities that you conducted during the safe harbor period are not being reconducted post-safe harbor period. Mm-hmm. His claims require identifying an adverse event, a new adverse event, and identifying a new use because of that new adverse event. That new adverse event was discovered, if at all, during the safe harbor provision. And what was new can only be new once. That new adverse event was identified during the clinical study safe harbor period. Later, reanalyzing data for patenting purposes or including the information on a label that was already identified is not practicing the steps of the claims, which do require identification of a new adverse event. And I think as a separate grounds, which also the district court pointed to, was the lack of any evidence related to actually tying what activities were being focused upon for purposes of infringement. The only thing alleged below was the reanalysis of the data, the alleged reanalysis of data for patenting purposes. And again, there's no evidence that that ever took place. And you can't fault the district court for not reviewing evidence that wasn't presented. In the appeal, Klassen argued in its briefs, the district court failed to consider the evidence. Well, the district court did look at the very, very minimal record, and there was no evidence of reanalysis of data. And if you, at the district court level, Klassen complains about the district court's analysis, the issues presented to the district court were the exact same issues that were before this court on appeal. And the district court specifically asked Klassen during the summary judgment hearing, what you're arguing now differ from the guidance given by the Federal Circuit? And Klassen was unable to articulate any reason that its scenario was distinct from that in the analysis that the Federal Circuit provided in its decision. And I also would like to just note on this factual issue, this case came to the district court, and this is a different Judge Bennett than that decided, a different judge that decided this summary judgment is different than the judge who decided the first summary judgment. It came to the judge after 10 years of litigation and extensive fact and expert discovery, and after all this time and all the evidence that was collected during discovery, Klassen has not pointed to any deposition testimony of the numerous witnesses supporting its reanalysis position. It has identified any documents supporting its reanalysis position. And for that reason, it was not surprising, and it was entirely appropriate for the district court to issue summary judgment on that independent basis, a lack of any fact issue and dispute.
Can I ask you about that? And we asked your friend about there are pending counterclaims here or pending defenses here that were dismissed without prejudice?
No, the counterclaims are not dismissed without prejudice. There are still pending claims with respect to invalidity. There was a 101 argument. It was in the final pretrial order. The parties did submit an entire pretrial order.
So they were not dismissed without prejudice?
Correct.
Then there's no final judgment.
And there's an issue with respect to, you're raising the Rule 54B issue, Your Honor, I believe. In the prior...
Is it 54B here?
Was there a 54B here?
There was in the prior appeal, and then the judge issued summary judgment, and our position is that We concede to the appeal by Zito under the same umbrella of that prior Rule 54B because the judge considered the same issues that it considered previously.
Where is that? Do we have some piece of paper in the joint appendix that describes this?
There's nothing in the joint
appendix. Not entirely ordinary process?
Right. There's nothing in the joint appendix.
So we can treat this as a 54B even though there's no final judgment and there are counterclaims still pending?
We concede to that, yes, Your Honor.
So you mentioned the 101. I mean, it just seems a little odd, perhaps, that you just mentioned 10 or 12 years of litigation and loads of discovery and certain invalidity defenses or counterclaims that can certainly be disposed of fairly promptly. It's just a little odd how this case went down, right?
Yeah, the case was moved along fairly quickly, Your Honor, and got to the point of a final pretrial order before the judge in the first time, found summary judgment. So summary judgment was found back in 2005, 2006, and on this limited basis of failure of proof as to infringement, both from a factual standpoint and from a legal standpoint under the safe harbor provision. And the case then was stayed pending the reexamination proceedings. And so things just did not move forward, and on remand, the district court judge, the new judge, looked at what Klassen argued on appeal, looked at the record on remand, and said, this is the exact same argument. We're going to just move forward with this rather than open up again everything with respect to 101. There were 112 issues, prior art issues, et cetera.
Just to circle back on one point, just to be clear, because I thought I heard your friend say that the counterclaims of the defenses were dismissed without prejudice, and you're saying that wasn't the case.
Correct, Your Honor. And I have nothing further unless you have additional questions, sir.
Thank you.
Counsel stated that the district court said it's the exact same argument, and that is the problem because it's not the exact same argument. And this is not Teltronix, and this court said explicitly this case is not Teltronix. Teltronix, in that case, there was a set of steps that had to occur in a laboratory. Those steps, 1 through 5, all occurred, and they were done. A year later, they took laboratory results and brought them to investors to get money. Teltronix argument was, aha, getting money is a commercial use, so now the steps that you've already done somehow come out of protection. We're not arguing that. So it's not Teltronix, it's not the same. And that goes back to the court. District court never analyzed. Let me read you from appendix page 10, which is from the district court's decision. The alleged acts of commercialization by Elon, the filing of patent applications based on the reanalyzed clinical data, and the sale of Scalexin with a revised label containing information derived from the clinical trial, appear, contrary to Klassen's argument, far less commercial in nature than those activities deemed protected in Teltronix. Accordingly, these activities remain within the scope of the safe harbor, and Elon is entitled to summary judgment. So the courts agreed, and in Elon's brief at page 22.
Wait a minute. But keep going in the opinion, because at appendix 11, they kind of deal with an alternative. Discovery long and complete, Klassen has produced no evidence of alleged reanalysis of the data for commercial purposes, and so they go through the failure of your failure to provide any evidence to support infringement.
Which is contrary to what they say in the paragraph before, which is that they reanalyzed clinical data, which is the evidence. And as Elon admits in their brief on page 22, there was a pre-examination search. There was an identification of the inventorship. There is evidence in there. What the judge didn't do was ever compare any of that evidence to whether or not it met any of the elements of the claim, which it was instructed to do. The court needs to look and see if
something like that contradicts what I read to you. Said that contradicts the paragraph before. So where is the what is the paragraph before? I'm sorry.
Which it says.
Give me a page and a paragraph.
The activities of the activities of Elon, quote, appear contrary to Klassen's argument, far less commercial in nature than those activities.
What page are you on? 10 or 11?
I'm on appendix page 10. Okay. The court's conclusion, it's the paragraph that begins with the court's conclusion that Elon's post-submission activities fit within the scope. What the court did was say, these activities, though commercial in nature, don't amount to infringement because of the safe harbor. They didn't say, and then the next paragraph says, and so you've shown no commercial activities that are outside the safe harbor. Not that we've shown no commercial activities. Because clearly you've shown step six, the 131 step of documenting inventorship. There's an inventor's name. There's an application which has the inventor's signature on it. Clearly that step was done. We put that into the record. And the court is simply saying, I see that step, but I don't think it gets outside the safe harbor. Not, there's no evidence of that step. It says there's no evidence that takes you outside the safe harbor. Not no evidence of commercialization. Court certainly can't be saying that selling a product with a label on it in the market is not evidence of commercialization. That's a sale of a product. What the court is saying is I'm not analyzing this in terms of comparing it to claim language, which is what the court should be doing. I'm simply analyzing it to say no matter what happens, it doesn't take the clinical activities out of the safe harbor. So it's not evidence of infringement because infringement is precluded by the safe harbor. It's not evidence of infringement because they didn't do those steps.
Thank you.
And that's...
I'm sorry to be a pest about this. So Rule 54B, as I'm looking at it, says that the judge has to expressly find that there is no just reason for delay in order for that provision to apply. You haven't presented to us anything in which the judge said that, which means we have no jurisdiction over this appeal.
You may be right on that point. I stand corrected that there was no dismissal of the, no dismissal without prejudice of the other. But the previous appeal had a Rule 54B certification on it. At this point, the judge simply said, we're done with the case appeal. So that you may be correct that there's no jurisdiction. But the district...
Okay. Both sides and the case is submitted.